Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
Well, it's COVID lockdown week number 657, I think. Time for another TC Signal to Noise. We got the crew all here. Jim Wiesmeyer, Otley Salaka, I'm John Harith. And a special treat this week. Jim, you had a very interesting conversation with Greg Dowd, who is the chief ag negotiator for the U.S. Trade Representative's office, and we'll get to that in just a little bit. But a lot of new data, especially about where we stand with China. So thanks for getting that, Jim. We look forward to hitting that here in just a few minutes. But let's start with the back and forth this week on an aid package for farmers coming out of USDA. Jim, it's kind of weird. You were predicting that we were going to see something on Wednesday. After you predicted that, we got a call from USDA with Sonny saying that Sonny Perdue wanted some airtime, which we did set up for Thursday of this week on our Farm Journal Live and on Ag Day Television. And so we all expected, okay, the announcement is going to come Wednesday night or Thursday morning. Well, Sonny Perdue is on with Clinton Griffiths, and we don't have a detailed plan yet. What happened this week?
I think it was going to be announced Wednesday, but then they got some pushback from some people in the White House for whatever reason, and USDA was given a series of questions, a longer series, by the way, than they thought that they had to address, and that has taken a while. Now, late word, now this is Friday, is that we could get it tonight, meaning Friday night, but I don't think you get any prize for guessing the right date. But we all know the basic components. It's going to be a combination of direct payments and food purchases. And this won't even be the last, John, because I think that the tally this go around will be $16 to $19 billion probably, and then it could go up to $25 billion or more later this summer when USDA can tap that $14 billion in CCC borrowing authority that they were granted earlier this year.
Yeah, and Annalisa, you just heard another prediction from the dairy industry about when they're expecting to see this come out.
Yeah, like Jim said, predictions are usually worth what you pay for them. But according to Paul Bleiberg from National Milk, their best guess is Tuesday. And he didn't elaborate, Jim, on what the timing around that might be. But for whatever reason, they're thinking Tuesday.
Tuesday. There you go.
We all thought Wednesday this week. So.
Yeah, I can see where if they're getting pushback from whatever reason, they need some more time on the weekend to true it up. But I don't know why it would have to go beyond Monday. But, you know, there you go. We will know when you start getting a lot of leaks from the lawmakers, their staffs up on Capitol Hill, and the different commodity groups, because we all know they can't keep a secret.
Yeah, and we do know, Jim, the broad strokes in this. As you pointed out, Secretary Perdue told Clinton Griffiths on Thursday that we are looking at a $16 to $18, maybe even $19 billion plan. $16 billion of it will be direct payments, and the secretary said that that will cover all ag sectors, even down to horticulture. But we don't know what the rates for any of those payments are going to be yet. And then another $2 to $3 billion for product purchases that will then be donated to the food banks across the country. And I know, Annalisa, this was a big priority for the dairy industry in particular.
Yeah, I mean, among other things, that is definitely something that they've been pushing. And Jim, you know, while we're on the subject of potential dairy help, I did think it was interesting too on that call that I was just on. They were talking about, you know, while Perdue says that he will not reopen the dairy margin coverage program, that there is the potential for Congress to legislate him to do that. And I'm curious what your input is on that.
I wouldn't think the Republicans would go along with that. So while it may be pushed in the House, I don't see the Senate going along with that from a majority leader perspective, Mitch McConnell, Kentucky. But I'll check in on that because that opens up a can of worms, as we've said before, because there's moral hazard there. They got an extension to come in to that program, and there's other things that they could do and they will do. Direct payments, and food purchases. If it's seen that they need additional assistance, then they can always announce that in the second ag aid package, which I'll almost guarantee you will occur between now and the election, because they run the the possibility of, if they were to reopen the DMC, then if the corn price goes down significantly lower, it's already low, but lower, then those farmers who got into the ARC, and that program has ended as far as the options, the price loss coverage program will look more attractive the lower the corn price goes. And they'll say, huh, you did it for dairy, why not us? Well, that could be pretty costly as well. So we'll see. I'm never ruling out anything in this town, but I do not see things coming out of the Hill from a minute policy perspective, because they cannot even agree all this week on additional $250 billion of funding for the paycheck protection program that's now ended because they're out of funds. So if they can't even agree on that, can you imagine what they can agree on policy initiatives? I don't think so. Nope, yeah, I don't think so.
I wouldn't put any money on that bet, not only for the reasons you mentioned, but, as you said, the Senate's not going to touch it. There's a lot of members of Congress that probably don't really understand that program, and so they're going to look at people like Colin Peterson, who is going to oppose a measure like that. So I think the odds of anything like that making it through Congress are next to nothing.
And then you can go back to the tape. He told us and others that when the program was going on, he said it's a no-brainer to go into it. And he said, don't complain to me if later on, if you find out that you should have joined it. Plus, you got, a 25% discount if you extended your entry for 5 years. So all you have to do is call up that quote, and that'll settle the issue.
Yeah, exactly. Jim, let's get to that PPP funding that you mentioned. What is the holdup? I think we all agree that this is something that has to get passed and has to get passed very quickly. But why can't Congress find a path forward on that?
It's politics as usual. Now, the Democrats, from what I can understand from our contacts, thought that once this ran out of money, which it did yesterday, they thought they had leverage. Can you imagine wanting to put leverage on an issue like this? But they thought they would gain leverage to get those other things that they want, a whole list of items. So it's politics, and there's a little fault for both sides. But, Farm Bureau just came out maybe 10 minutes ago with their impact assessment of the PPP, and they noted very few farmers took them up on it. I know the stats show looks like a little over 27,000 farmers. It rounds to $3 billion on approved dollars, for the program. That's a chunk of change there, though. But they pointed out that on April the 3rd, when the application window opened for this program, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin predicted the funds would last through June the 6th. Can you imagine? Yeah. So it's clear that this is a popular program, maybe not in agriculture, but they finally got their act together the few hours before they ran out of money on the ag provisions. But it's not a question of if there's going to be the $250 billion, it's when. And, will that mean next week? Once politics involves in this, I have no idea, John, but it's coming. And then I also feel for those independent contractors, you know, the smaller ones and the self-employed individuals, because they were a week later, recall, than the startup for the traditional program. And I think it was only open for a couple of days before they ran out of money. So it's a major program. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, farmers and smaller businesses really get a disadvantage in applying for that money, which is even more reason to get that funding passed, because how can you justify funding someone's competition but not that business? And it really makes no sense at all.
Agreed totally.
All right. Well, one last issue before we get to the interview with Greg Dowd. Jim, you just sent me a note a little bit ago that USDA is now wanting to look at the CO2 issue, which is the short version is CO2 is a byproduct of ethanol production that's used in livestock slaughter. And because ethanol production has dropped so much, there's now a shortage of that cheap CO2 coming out of ethanol plants. So what's USDA looking for here?
Well, here we're hearing the shuttering of what you just said, those ethanol plants, has definitely affected the supplies of carbon dioxide that used by the meat and the food industry. USDA apparently wants information by April the 20th from the meat industry on their CO2 allocations and surcharges they had to pay the last 6 weeks. I think that directive came from the White House to USDA to find that information.
So there might be some relief for meat packers in that coming soon. At least that would hint.
I think that's it. Bingo. And that's some of the questions. Let's see. That's April 20th. That would play into Monday's the 20th. So maybe that Tuesday date may be correct. We don't know. But these are the types of questions that apparently some in the White House threw at USDA that has taken longer than they thought it would.
Well, and the issue, you mentioned they want to know what the cost to those packers has been, because CO2 is a byproduct of the ethanol production. It is a cheaper source than some of the other commercial sources out there that they're now having to turn to get that CO2 to keep the lines running.
Yes, and some of the processing plants that were near the ethanol facilities have had to go further out, so they've generated more transportation costs in order to get CO2.
All right. Well, let's turn now to the interview you did, Jim, with Greg Dowd, who is the chief ag negotiator for the U.S. Trade Representative's office. First of all, appreciate Mr. Dowd joining us once again. He gave us an update just before the end of 2019, and really comprehensive update here. Tell us about it and bring us into the interview, Jim.
Well, while most have focused on China's commitments to step up its purchases of U.S. farm products under Phase One, recall $36.5 billion was their target for this calendar year. I think in the first quarter we're probably right around $5 billion. Dowd emphasized early on in our interview, John, that China's commitment to other changes in that Phase One. He said there were 57 such agreements, and he offered up his thoughts on those and then and ones to come, plus other broader trade issues relative to USMCA, the UK, Japan, TRQs by China, et cetera. Yeah, it was a good quick update on the potpourri of trade issues that they're trying to handle at the U.S. Trade Rep's office. The underlying tone, you'll hear him bring up the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic, of how it's affected them. They can't bring Chinese officials over here to deal with certain issues like ractopamine and beef and pork production. They can't go over to China. They wanted to send negotiators over to the UK to continue, to begin negotiations on a trade agreement. That came through loud and clear in the interview when you piece it all together. And of course, the impact of of the COVID-19 on the overall world economy and the energy complex, because that, again, I'm reading between the lines of what he told us, but it's a potential impact negatively on the potential ethanol DDG exports to China, because they won't need them anymore. Nobody's driving. The whole trade apparatus has been turned asunder as a result of this enemy we can't see.
All right, here's U.S. Trade, U.S. Ag negotiator for the U.S. Trade Ambassador's Office, Greg Dowd, starting first with a look at where we stand with China.
Well, let's go through where we're at with China here first. Sure. A little bit. You know, the phase one agreement with China in agriculture was just not about purchases. It was also about fixing a very significant number of unwarranted trade barriers. I think there were something like 57 different things that we agreed between the U.S. and China to remedy and fix in this agreement. And some of those were upon entry into force, which was February the 14th. Some of those were within 5 days, 10 days, 20 working days, 1 month, 2 months. And so here we are now at kind of the 2 month point. And so far, we're doing very, very well. We're in constant contact with China almost every single day on back and forth, making sure getting things are fixed. And, you know, we're not perfect. There's still a few things here that we're trying to sort out. But I will tell you, Jim, every single day, despite what's going on in China, which is, you know, now we see what the difficulty that they've been going through here for, you know, most of this year. Despite all of that, they're working very hard. Our folks at USDA, FDA, et cetera, are working very hard to get all of this implemented. So, you know, the trade data will come here and we'll see it. We're seeing some purchases, but the key thing that we're focused on this point is getting the changes made that we agreed to in this agreement.
Of the 57 different things, what number are we on about, Greg?
That's a good question. I would say that we're well over half. And okay. We're, you know, there's a few protocols, and so much of this is really, really technical stuff. And so they, you know, they have questions, we have questions, and at a very technical level, we go back and forth. The discussions are very, very good, but we're getting there. And have we seen this manifest itself in terms of purchases yet? No. But in one case, I will say yes, Jim. What did we see in the export sales report today for the first time?
I'm looking. Sorghum, beans, beef.
We saw 1,500 tons of beef.
Yeah.
And that is a result of, so what the situation on beef was, entry into force February 14th. They agreed to make the changes 1 month later. The changes were made by the time we got all of the labeling stuff done and all of the technical things sorted out, and we didn't get them exactly done in a month, but a few days after, we were up and running. We have a few more wrinkles here that we're working on, but we're there. And I want to make another really key point here, Jim. One of the big things that we've always had trouble. In fact, every country in the world has struggled with China in terms of getting facilities approved and products approved. One of the things that we do have now is in terms of facility registration, whether it's in dairy, seafood, meat, poultry, pet food, animal feed, animal feed products, feed additives, we have 2,000 or over 2,200 facilities approved to ship to China. That is a huge, huge improvement from where we've been for years. And a lot of other countries have taken notice of that because everybody struggles with that. And so that is a big, big step forward that we have now under our belt.
Now, are the you know, do those have to be on-site inspections, you know, Greg, or not?
We still have a couple of areas where we do have to do that. And we're working through that. Obviously, we can't travel.
Sure.
Yet they can't come here. We can't come there. We're working on a couple ideas on how to remedy that and deal with that, that we're going to see if those will work. Again, the dialogue and the discussion is good. And I can't emphasize enough here, Jim. We don't talk about this enough. the folks at USDA, APHIS, FSIS, AMS, Foreign Ag Service, I mean, just a huge number of folks have worked night and day here for the last couple of months. Huge kudos to them and Undersecretary McKinney and the Secretary, folks at FDA, et cetera, to get this, all these things done. This is a lot of work, and China's worked very hard as well. We've made a huge amount of progress here, and so now the question is, will this manifest itself into sales? Well, my answer to that is, at these prices, Jim, I sure would think so. Gee, many Christmas.
What? Now, Wanda, what are a few ag-related measures, you know, yet to be implemented of that list that would be of note, Greg?
Well, I think, I'm trying to think here in going down through this. I think we're still a couple little wrinkles on dairy. I think whey permeate is one thing coming up here in May. There's some fruit and vegetable stuff coming up. There's, I think, alfalfa hay. We've got some things we're working on here. But the big things, you know, especially the beef and the poultry, the pet food on the meat side, I think we're in really good shape there. We maybe have a couple little things we're working on. You know, we still have to have a conversation about the ractopamine issue. There's been a lot of good discussions in teeing that up, though. I think one of the issues there is we got to be able to travel to talk about some of those things too, and have technical folks do that. And Jim, I just don't have any ability to know when we're going to be able to do that.
Gotcha. I was just going to ask you on the status of the study by China on racto in cattle and hog productions. Is that underway?
Well, there's no timeline on that, but we are talking about it back and forth, and we've got some things teed up here to get going with them on that. But some of that is we want to send some folks over and show them some stuff, and they want to come over here, and we need to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. And right now we just can't.
Now, when we talked before, some people were rather negative that China would eventually or would ever approve the use of ractopamine. Is that too a negative stance or not?
I think ever is probably too negative. I think there are certainly challenges there on that particular topic, and a huge chunk of the challenge, Jim, is just the language barrier and how what they refer to in their language, the term is shorogene, which literally translates into lean meat powder, and what they call those things there versus, you know, some they include some things that we banned here a long time ago, and they lump a lot of different things together. It's a language nomenclature issue that we've got to figure out how to sort through at some point. I think we will, but it's going to be hard.
Maybe we should change our word.
Well, we've got to sort through it is the answer to the question. Okay. Some of these things are not easy.
No, they're not. No, they're not. Well, where are we on the, you know, can you step us through the report that will come from each country relative to the quarterly reports on imports and exports? And the trade keeps on asking me, is this going to be on a CIF or a FOB basis?
Well, I don't, Jim, I'm confused by that because there is no really requirement for a quarterly report. Now,
oh, there isn't?
No. What we have is an agreement on a monthly basis at a you know, technical level, and we're going to be meeting and talking about issues. That's been happening, and we're going to continue to do that. On a quarterly basis, we'll be talking at my level, and we're getting geared up for one of those coming up here at some point. And then twice a year, we'll be talking at the principal's level, Ambassador Lighthizer's level. And so those are the touch points, monthly, quarterly, twice a year. But in terms of public reports, I'm not sure that there will be anything of that nature.
Okay, that's actually news because it's been reported that there would be reports. So that's interesting.
Now, you know, you've seen some press releases that we've done.
Yes.
Kind of to show folks, you know, what we've accomplished and things that we've accomplished. And I think there are some really good things there. We're also will be looking at the trade data, and everybody can look at the trade data, and we'll have Chinese trade data. We'll have U.S. trade data. And Boy, Jim, that's an imperfect science. Always has been with any country, going back and forth of what is the, you know, accurate way to depict all of this stuff. And when you're talking about the quantities that we're talking about, just in agriculture back and forth between the U.S. and China, it's never going to completely match up. But we're going to, you know, we're going to take a look at that. And we have the January and February trade data now. We're ahead of where we were last year, but are we on pace for where we need to be for phase one? No, we are not. But they've had coronavirus over there. You know, we didn't get the agreement implemented until, you know, the 14th of February. So we'll be looking at the May trade data here. That'll probably come out, I don't know, plus or minus the second week in May, I think. So that March trade data will be an interesting thing to look at. We know we've got some, we also know from the export sales reports, we've got some wheat on the books. We've got some corn on the books. We've, you know, soybeans, a lot of pork. Now you see beef today. So it'll be interesting to see what we see on the poultry side, on the dairy side, and all the fruit and vegetable side as well.
And sorghum. They've been a pretty good buyer of sorghum, haven't they?
No, they really have. And we saw in the export sales report today, two more cargoes of sorghum to China. You've seen the basis for grain sorghum in Kansas get back to where it was in 2014 when things were really, you know, doing well in that regard. So, you know, there are good signs out there. There are areas where we've got to, you know, continue to monitor and keep a close eye on this. And obviously, you know, the big one coming up here is soybeans. And you know, Brazil's had a big crop. They've been, you know, but China's been importing a lot of soybeans here, huge soybean imports. So, you know, the question and the issue here is, you know, pretty soon here, I don't know, another month or so, it'll be our time to shine. And we'll be watching that closely. What are they going to do?
Well, now, China's been canceling some prior purchases of cotton, I know, and I think it's considerable. Are you asking about that?
Well, the situation there, to the best of my knowledge, is the fact that some of that, Jim, was on the books all the way back in 2018, and it was purchased at really high prices. And we were, you know, and I've talked to the cotton guys all the time, and you know, they've had a tough time with the trade war and everything else, and you had huge cotton stocks, you know, 2016, 2017. So our trade in cotton, you know, back on the baseline year of 2017 really wasn't that big because of the cotton stocks that they had. Late last year, though, we saw signs of this thing really starting to come around, and everybody was like, okay, we got these huge sales on the books, but the textile industry in China is starting to come around, everything's, this is looking good, and all of a sudden coronavirus hit. And, you know, that's a function of just global demand for textiles, Jim. It's not at all, you know, any semblance of where it used to be. And so if you're not making clothes, you're in whatever products, you don't need the cotton. And it's not China's fault. It's, you know, Vietnam, as you saw today, you saw cancellations in Vietnam, Pakistan, and in China. That's just a function of what's going on in the global textile market. And it's not pretty.
Has China requested consultations under the deal? Have they asked for any extension?
No.
On their commitments? They have not. Are you surprised about that or not?
No, I think, you know, I think just tremendous uncertainty here, Jim. Everybody's, you know, trying to figure out, you know, the next shoe to drop or whatever analogy you want to use here. I think there will be, you know, conversations at the appropriate time. But to answer your question to date, the answer is no.
Okay. What about, we spent some time the last time we discussed, Greg, on their TRQ commitments. What's the update on that? Have they lived up to them? Are they going to live up to them? You know, can the U.S. look toward, you know, some of those commitments to get some sales?
It's a really good question, and it's something that we are watching very closely here, and we have folks that at USDA and here at USTR that monitor that on a very regular basis. To explain this, we won a WTO case in 2019, a year or more than a year ago against China on how they were implementing their tariff rate quotas for rice, wheat, and corn. When they became a member of the WTO, they were supposed to import 9.6 million tons of wheat, 7.2 million tons of corn, and I can't remember the rice number, every year from somebody in the world. And they've never operated those tariff rate quotas correctly. We filed a WTO case. We won that. And as part of our phase one discussion, they said, all right, on January 1, we will implement and do it correctly. And what have you seen since then, Jim? You've seen them buy some Ukrainian corn. You've seen them buy some U.S. corn. You've seen them buy some U.S. wheat. That's a good sign. That is the fact that they are actually utilizing those tariff rate quotas, and we'll continue to keep an eye on that.
How about rice?
I don't know exactly what they're doing on rice. We've had great discussions with them on rice from a technical standpoint. I'm not aware of anything that would restrict that. Rice purchases from the U.S. other than price, you know, our rice is more expensive than their rice. They're a huge rice producer in the world, but our rice is a very different and special kind of rice. So it depends on what they're going to do there. I don't think we've seen anything to date.
Okay. So you're still fairly upbeat relative to their TRQ commitments then, from what I'm hearing from you.
Well, the fact that they have bought some corn and rice from us is a good sign. But are we ready to say they are fully implementing what they need to do? I'm not ready to say that yet.
Okay. What about the level of China's tariffs still in place on U.S. farm products? I mean, I know the hog producer groups, you know, Nick Giordano, he keeps on mentioning that would be a big thing for them to lift. Is that really needed, Greg? Because can't they take action over there to buy by either waiving the tariffs on an individual basis or not?
Well, we're talking about two different types of retaliation here, and the first one is the 301 tariffs. And what China announced, and this is very important, China announced on March the 2nd that they were going to have an exclusions process. And we have encouraged our exporters to encourage their importers in China, the people they're dealing with, request these exclusions on the 301 tariffs. And what we are seeing on a pretty regular basis is within sometimes 24 hours, 48 hours upon the request, they're being granted. Now, where the port guys are frustrated, and I get that, is they've got the 301 tariff excluded, but they're being retaliated against because of the 232 steel and aluminum tariffs. And that is a 25% retaliation against our pork. And that puts them at a clear disadvantage against the Europeans, the Brazilians, and others.
And what's the outlook on that?
You'd have to ask China. They're the ones, doing the retaliating.
Okay. All right. What are we going to see a move away from China, Greg, in terms of the supply chains? I know that's going to be the case relative to medical supplies, but will that morph into some concerns on U.S.-China trade in the future as far as if we significantly move away from China in other areas?
Gosh, Jim, I don't know the answer to that question. That's really a company-by-company, private sector analysis. I don't have any ability to answer that question.
Okay. Any other, before I go into other areas, any other China-related topics that you think the public should know?
No, I think that's a good recap to say that, we're doing better than we were a year ago. We've got a lot of new opportunities that we've opened up in phase one here. We've been successful so far in implementing this, but are we on pace for where we need to be to implement the dollar amount on phase one? No, we are not yet.
And what about the ethanol sector? You've seen the collapse here with the hope that China will import a lot of DDG products from us and ethanol. Any update on that?
Well, the whole energy sector right now with $20 a barrel oil, Jim, is just a train wreck. And we all know that. I think the question that I hear most often with ethanol trade in the world is everybody, we've talked to countries in South America, you talk to China, you know, we know what's going on here. Nobody's driving cars anywhere in the world. And so the question on ethanol trade is the price is certainly right, but where would you put it if you shipped it? That's it's a real challenge here for us on the ethanol side. We have the same problem here. You know, there's that's such the difficult thing to wrap your head around is this is a global phenomenon now. This challenge of this virus, this invisible enemy, is everywhere in the world.
Yes. Well, in the midst of that, it's a, you know, global recession, and that's an understatement. How is USTR going to assist U.S. Exporters and farmers to regain that foothold as the world reopens and the economies pick up? Or do you have a strategy?
Well, the strategy is what we've been doing, Jim, with USMCA, Canada, and Mexico. We're frantically working right now to get that entered into force and get that deal up and running. One of the great unsung trade deals in the history of U.S. agriculture, in my opinion, is what Ambassador Lighthizer was able to do with Japan. Absolutely phenomenal situation now that we are, as of January 1, even with everybody else into Japan, the tariffs have come down here. And definitely helping us on that front. And then obviously the phase one with China. So when you add those four countries alone up, Jim, that's nearly half of U.S. ag exports.
Where are we at on the phase two of Japan? Are consultations being held?
Well, the answer is that is definitely on the radar. The virus has got us hung up a little bit on that. I think the first thing obviously that we'd like to get up and running is our negotiations with the UK, the United Kingdom. That was the expectation was that we would be going by now with the UK on that had it not been for this doggone virus. And hopefully as soon as we can figure out, you know, when everybody can get back up and running again here, and who knows when that is, Jim.
Yeah. When you said going, you mean eyeball to eyeball consultations, right?
Negotiations, yes, sir.
Negotiations. Okay. On the USMCA, why the delays on the implementation of that?
I don't know that we are delayed. What's going on right now is Canada is notified, Mexico is notified. We're in the process of doing that. We're talking with Canada and Mexico every day as we speak on this, and I don't have any knowledge that we're delayed. We are, in the process here. For the next step is for the U.S. this administration to notify Congress that has certified Canada and Mexico's compliance. It's a process here, and that's what we're working on right now, is to dot those I's and cross those T's.
Relative to the bird flu situation in Turkey and South Carolina, how have trading partners responded? I know China, much to our happiness, went with the regionalization language that I think is in the phase one agreement. Is that correct?
Yeah, you're bouncing around on me here. Okay, now we're talking about the situation in South Carolina. For the first time in, what, 3 years or so, we found a high path case down there.
Yes.
And that's something that USTR and USDA, we have worked on for years with all of our major trading partners on the poultry side of the equation, is to follow the international guidelines, the OIE, in terms of regionalization and how you deal with this. And so if we have one situation in a very localized area, you don't shut down the entire United States poultry trade. And so that was, we have a regionalization agreement with China as part of phase one. That is signed, operational, up and running. We've talked to our other trading partners, and so far everything seems to be working as it should per the international guidelines on how to deal with something like this.
What about the EU? I don't think they followed them, have they?
Well, I think we're good, you know. It's an ongoing conversation that we're talking with them about. Well, we'll see how all that goes.
So you are talking to them because they made some announcements, I believe, last week. I mean, these weeks are long now. So, but you at least are talking with them about their current position.
Yes, we have. We are talking. I think let's just leave it at that, shall we?
Okay. All right. I'm going to bounce around again on potential WTO challenges. As USTR, are you going to defend, are you prepared to defend our ag policy from challenges brought by trading partners? Because all of the, what most people would say, needed domestic agricultural support, not only from the trade mitigation, but also coming up here with this ag assistance relative to COVID-19.
Jim, we are confident, as always, that the United States will maintain policies consistent with our WTO obligations.
Okay. And you will defend the U.S. ag policy then as a result of that.
We are confident our policies will be consistent with our obligations.
Okay. You know, a current issue. This just happened yesterday again. And if you don't want to talk about this, I understand, Greg. Just tell us. But Trump keeps saying we have lost all of the cases at the WTO. When a report just came out the other day that the U.S. has won 85% of the claims that we brought against countries, including the two big wins, one of which you mentioned on China, on TRQ administration. What is he not reading the talking points or what?
Well, I'm not going to speculate on any of that, Jim. What I will say from an agricultural perspective, and there's a long history here of WTO cases in ag, that we've been successful in the WTO. But when you say we won a case at the WTO, my question to you is, what does that mean? In other words, always the issue here is how do you translate a legal success into fix and reform? And that's the great challenge we have going forward with us. That's an ongoing struggle that we have. We won the beef hormone case, but what was the prize at the end of the day? We've continued to struggle to deal with the Europeans on the use of technology in agriculture. We've won the two WTO cases with China on domestic supports and tariff-free quota administration, but we've got to make sure that ultimately the goal here is to have reform in what the policies are.
So what you'd say, it's the follow-through is what you just said.
That's one way to put it. You've actually got to affect change at the end of the day.
Yeah. Now, we had a WTO meeting coming up in June. Is that still good? Can that be done, virtual or not?
No, that's been canceled. I have no understanding of when that will be rescheduled.
What about phase two? I'm going to jump back to China, the phase two, deliberations and talks. Are those taking place?
No, not yet. What we're still, very busy working on is phase one implementation. Still a lot going on there. I don't have any update for you on what phase two is. We've been overtaken by events here just a little bit, Jim.
Okay. Do you still talk to your counterpart, the same counterpart that you had so many discussions with going into the, phase one talks?
Are we talking with is USDA, FDA, USTR talking to our Chinese counterparts? Yes. Have I talked specifically to the vice minister recently? No. Most of the conversations have all been going on at a technical level. But and those are going on almost every day.
Okay. Bottom line, wrapping up here, Greg, last time we talked, you were fairly upbeat on improving U.S.-China, trade relations. Are you still optimistic?
We are improving U.S.-China trade relations in agriculture. In implementing of the phase one, we've been very successful to date. We've still got steps to go through and boxes to check here and all the different things that we've agreed to make progress on. But so far, so good. And now we've got to see this translate into purchases. The challenge here is obviously, global economics. We don't need to go into all that. We all understand that. But on the other side of that is at these prices, Jim, what a tremendous opportunity for consumers in the world to step up to the plate and buy the best ag products on earth, which are from the U.S. Now, one of the challenges that we have going forward amid all of this economic turmoil is the strength in the value of the dollar. It continues to be a real challenge for us, particularly versus Brazilian real, the Argentine peso, and I would even throw in there the Russian ruble has really been hit so far this year. Those are, you know, Russian wheat, Brazilian soybeans and corn, Argentine soybeans and corn. They're going to be difficult competition for us given what's happened to their currencies.
All right. I think those are all the topics that I wanted to address. Are there other areas in trade that you're working on at all?
No, the only thing I would say, Jim, is there's obviously the day-to-day, all kinds of, one-off issues all around the world that we're dealing with. We've actually still been busy. There's a lot of different challenges that we deal with on a daily basis around here. And hopefully, continue to make progress with China and get started with the UK. Looking forward to that.
Have you seen any reports relative to U.S.-China information that you say, dag dang it, that's just false information that you want to correct? And if so, what is it?
I don't know that I've seen anything that's false. The trade data in terms of what you see sometimes is always a challenge. That's an imperfect science even in today's world, and that's something we're going to have to keep an eye on. The good thing is it's so nice to have the USDA export sales report, and the fact that we work so hard on making sure that information is transparent and public. That's important. That's really important work.
That's Chief U.S. Ag Negotiator Greg Dowd with the U.S. Trade Representative's Office with really, Jim, an update on a broad array of trade issues that they are working on, or he's working on there alone in the fourth floor of the U.S. Trade Ambassador's Office. Jim, thanks for getting that set up, and thanks for the great conversation with Greg.
It was fun, and I think, he did contribute to our update of what's going on in the trade arena.
All right, well, you and Annalisa both stay safe and stay home and enjoy the another week of quarantine this coming week. And we'll talk to you next week on DC Signal to Noise.